stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place?
All right, hey guys, this is Tom introducing the fellas tonight for Shoe Geeks episode for August. So Nitta was a bit upset that he never gets introed, so he's put me up to it this month. the best there. This month we got joining us Sam Hopper, known as Hopper, on the episode as well. So g'day, mate. Thanks for joining us.
G'day. Cheers for asking me to hop on.
No, it's good. It's good to finally get you on. And as usual, we got Julian Spence in Ballarat, so owner of the running company Ballarat, and obviously a okay distance runner.
Fastest marathoner on this podcast. Oh, well,
he's okay.
Unless Hopper's not telling us something.
And Mike Nitschke, also known as Nitta.
I think I'm the slowest on here. What's your marathon PB, Hopper?
It's a touchy subject. I was meant to be doing Gold Coast for my first one, but yeah, that didn't happen.
Oh, you haven't done one?
No, it's going to debut this year.
What were you aiming at? 230, under 230?
Yeah, I was hoping for that. I did low 69 for a half, so I was hoping like maybe sub 230.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you're in decent shape.
Very good.
All right, so I think that's it. Did you want
intro Hopper? Who is he? Tell us about him.
Info on this bloke. He's obviously got some beautiful hair, as we can see.
Half. Tell us what you run. Tell us your PBs, Hopper.
PBs. Okay. So, yeah, leading up to that Gold Coast debut that never happened, I started running all my PBs in the shorter distances, as usually happens. I actually trained myself into a stress reaction in my pubic bone. So I was pretty lucky. I only had 8 days off in the end. So I thought it was going to be...
You sure that was a stress reaction or just a sore...
I actually did a long run. It was quite a fast long run as well. It was with one of these guys, one of my training mates in Sydney, Hamish Wallace. He's quite a fast half runner as well, not compared to you guys, but yeah, he took me around this quite hilly loop one Sunday, and the morning of that long run, I loaded up on ibuprofen and some water, and I actually was just trying to cover up this hip tightness and glute pain that I'd got the week prior. And then after that long run, we did like 39K. It was pretty fast. It was like 3:48. So it's pretty solid. And he turned to me and he's like, mate, we could just run like a 2:30 marathon today if we want. We could just start picking it up. And I was like, let's not run the race today. And then after that, I actually text Tom DeCando and I was like, mate, do you know, I know you deal with the feet, but do you know what this could be? Because I was freaking out. I did a workout around the Bay Run in quite close to where Tom lives in Sydney. And this was 2 days later. And I almost had to walk to my car on the cool down because I was in that much agony. And I ended up getting an MRI later that week and it came back. It was like a very mild bone stress. So I was pretty stoked. I just started doing strength work for the first time in my life, and then slowly. Yeah, so I wasn't really sleeping much because I work in retail like you most, and I was trying to, I just got addicted with like doing my doubles 5 days a week and training for the marathon, and I just got obsessed with it.
What do you mean you weren't sleeping? That retail shuts at 5, mate. We're good.
Our hours are 10 till 6, so I'd get home and go for my run at like 6:45. And then, I started pushing my 30-minute doubles out to 35, out to 40, and they were creeping closer to 4-minute Ks, and it was just, it was a concoction. It was really, I was ready to pop. I knew something was going to happen, but I'd be eating.
Eight days off. Like, Tom gets a head cold and he takes 2 weeks off.
Yeah. I'd get in that shape before a race, though. So, I had that period off, and then luckily gotten, I kept a little bit of shape for Launceston. I got a few jogs in before that race and I'd already booked the trip. And I had a bloody mare trying to get on the plane to get down there. They overbooked the flight because they'd somehow cancelled the afternoon flight. And then there were four of us going down for the race that were stuck at Sydney Airport. And they weren't going to let us on the plane. And they eventually got us to Hobart. Anyway, it was all the stars were not aligning. And they were pretty much everything saying I shouldn't race. And got down there, just sort of picked a pace that I knew I could hold. So I ran, was it like 3:15s or something? And Tom Middleton and Nick Earl just sat on the back of me. And I was like, oh, this is sweet. Like, they're going to destroy me later on. But at least I've got some company. And then yeah, I went 69.09 there, which I was kind of relieved that I got. I didn't care about the time, but I just was relieved that I didn't get an extra stress fracture. And then I've just been doing no doubles. I think I've done like five doubles since. And then
you ran a good 10K as well. You snuck under 31 this year as well, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sydney 10, I did 30.39. Yeah, and like I suck at all speed work. But somehow just like doing heaps more mileage than usual, just ran like a minute 40 PB. So like, nice when you're getting closer to 30, you're like, oh, this is sick.
Now, talk to us about your work, Sam.
Oh, yeah. So I work at a running shoe store called Pace Athletic. So that's like a small local business in Sydney that's expanding reasonably quickly. They've got four stores now. So I manage two of them, the Mossman store and the Crow's Nest store. So they're two suburbs in Sydney. And then we've got a Manly store and a Roselle store as well. So yeah, there's a few New Zealanders that work around the place. We've got
how'd you get into footwear retail? Like, you know, obviously you got a bit of passion for it. How'd you get there?
Well, it all kind of happened when I first moved to Australia. It was May 2018, and I was with Run Crew in Sydney, just over online coaching, and I was doing that back in New Zealand where I'm from. And yeah, I was messaging Ben on Facebook while I was still living over there. I was actually working as a hiking guide and I was pretty unfit, and I was saying to him, oh, if you hear of any jobs or anything in Australia, I'd be keen to like come over and start running a bit more seriously because I think I could like run a bit faster. And yeah, like 6 months later, he messaged me on Facebook and said, oh, our flatmate moved out. Like, do you want a room? And I was like, sick, I'll be there. So I'd already booked a flight to see some friends a few months later in Melbourne. So spent a week in Melbourne, shot up to Sydney, started living with Benny Sane. And then I was actually at a brewery with him for the UTA taper night. He was like a guest speaker for it. And he introduced me to the two owners of the shoe store. And like, I studied PE back in New Zealand, or exercise science equivalent. So it was pretty hard to get a job with that degree without doing like a teaching master's afterwards. So yeah. I was like, oh, even if I just work in retail for a little bit, it'll be fine. And then I can move on. And just, I kind of just moved over with a one-way flight just to get into running a bit more and just get back into the sport. Because I knew I wanted to run some fast times eventually. They're still coming. But, yeah, I ended up starting a week later after I met the two owners of the shoe store, and then haven't really left, just stayed and enjoyed it. And I had a short stint at Nike for like a few days and then didn't really like that style of retail compared to sort of specialty run.
You were in the Sydney store?
Yeah, yeah. I was in the George Street store very briefly. And then, yeah, I rang my boss, my old bosses there at the running store. And I was like, oh, hey, Will, can I come back and sell running shoes? Because I just noticed like there's a lot more focus on like apparel. And you don't really always get runners coming through the door. So people are coming in and they're like, oh, can I have the Kyrie 6? And I get home. I was texting some of the boys back at the running store that are good runners, and I was like, honestly, these people keep coming in for like the Jordan shoes and the Kyries, and they're like, the fact you're calling them the Jordan shoes is a sign.
Mate, I got a funny story. When I was working in Nike Town in London, Same sort of thing. Like you get all sorts coming in. And I was working 2008, so the year of Beijing Olympics, and we actually stocked in the running department like all the field footwear as well. So we had like long jump, high jump, all this stuff. And one bloke came in one day off the street in his jeans, wasn't doing athletics, and he wanted to buy the high jump shoes, and he left with the high jump shoes. I have no idea what he was going to do with those shoes, but he wanted them.
It was probably the colorway. Was that the year they had like yellow into pink, like that fluorescent? They like
no, I think
or was that was London?
That, Rio? That was Rio 16.
Yeah,
there was. So you know, that. There was the field. The field athletes are so hard done by with shoes that I saw half of them wearing their Rio shoes at Tokyo 5 years later.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
That's harsh, isn't it?
Yeah.
Unless you were Nike with their new spikes on the field events, but I saw other Adidas spikes from 5 years ago for sure, and not Adidas specifically, but some Pumas and old Asics and they're hard done by. So you've been working in retail for, especially running retail for a couple of years now. So how's that been during the COVID period and everything? I mean, obviously people are still running, buying shoes and
it's pretty niche. Like usually, especially with specialty retail, like it's a bit different than just buying online, like especially with something that can potentially injure you or you can stuff up with sizing and things like that. So it's kind of hard when you're not physically there measuring feet and like having the interaction. So there's a lot of sort of telesales. There's a lot of conversations just going to the phone rather than in person, and a lot of online queries and things. And like Pace Athletic, where I work, they actually have like a few social media platforms. So they do like the odd YouTube video and Instagram. And I've done a couple of like very brief videos on a couple of models of shoes. And every now and then I'll see my girlfriend in Canberra and I'll get these like random DMs on Instagram and people are asking me like, oh, what are your views on this shoe? And I'm like, what the hell? And it's just because I've been tagged in this like Pace Instagram. So yeah, it's been like everything's sort of gone online, and in store we've got reduced hours now. So one of the days, we usually are open 7 days a week, but Sundays we aren't open.
You're in Sydney. You're in lockdown. You can't open.
Yeah, we're in. We've got click and collect. That's it.
Oh yeah, click and collect.
Yeah. So the door's shut. Don't worry. And then I'm pretty much just packing it online. Like it's an online store essentially. So you just pack orders and yeah, people can open the door, grab their order, and leave and things like that.
It's very lonely. Julian wanted to throw you on the bus from the get go. You've been working in specialty retail and. Guess the big question is, can running shoes cause injury?
Ooh, I would say, yeah, certain categories of shoe definitely would be dangerous. And I've seen that. I've seen a few, I wouldn't say increased injury, but especially with some of the super shoes, I'd say we've seen, like, injury sites change. And I know I'd never even heard of a sacral stress fracture until, like, the 4%ers came out. And then every second athlete on Instagram and like Athletics Australia is coughing a sacral stress, even some of the boys I run with. And yeah, there are a lot of theories like overuse in some of those high stack, very soft midsole shoes and rigid plates were loading you a bit higher up than what people might have been conditioned to handle. So yeah, I would say in short, probably yes. I don't know. You might have from a medical stance, like TDC and Unita.
Nita's
like,
trying to trap you here. Nita traps you. Because he said, the shoe doesn't cause it. It's how much work you do in the shoe that causes it.
Hey,
that's a good way to say it.
We didn't hear of sacral stress as frequently as we are currently. We don't know if shoes are contributing to the change. So
theory. This is the Nita theory.
It is, yeah. It was my theory in 2018. I was saying it before it was cool. So
it was cool. Yeah,
well, you need to do a study because I don't believe it that much.
Yeah,
mate.
What about Hopper? Shoes fixing injuries. I'm sure you get runners coming in the store saying, "Oh, look, I've got this issue. What can you sell me that's going to fix it? Does it happen much? And oh, what do you do there?
Yeah, all the time. And every second person comes in and they're like, oh, I roll in. And I'm like, well, I hope so. I hope you're pro now. It's coming to do. I hope your body's doing what it's meant to. Yeah, I think like a lot of marketing gets in the way of like shoes and things. And it obviously helps people. I guess they come to specialty retail stores to, like, you get certain customers that, say, anyone that runs most days of the week, they sort of know what they're chasing. And they're the people that are coming in and they're like, look, I'm going to run, like, a 35-minute 5K. Like, give me some shoes for that, for training for that. And that's when you can go racing flats, your tempo shoes, and your dailies. But then you've also got customers coming in, they're like, I haven't run in 5 years. I just want a pair of shoes. And then you've got to divvy up like which type of customer and what sort of advice you're going to give them.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Like, I mean, you've been running for years helps you, you know, help the consumer get the right shoe. But I always thought specialty retail was it attracted the person who was a bit more educated than running, and so the sale was always a little bit harder. And whereas a person who goes to Rebel Sports normally trying to find a shoe that's $20 cheaper or whatever or sale. So you sort of need to be on the ball, don't you? You need to be able to answer the questions pretty well in specialty retail, don't you?
Yeah, and I think that's the art of it. Like you could obviously go to, I'm not going to name like any particular company, but you could go to a certain...
Don't you dare, Sam.
No, not you, don't worry. No. But say if you go to a sport equivalent of Kmart and that someone that's sort of selling thousands of types of products, they're not going to be specialized in what this particular shoe provides or the feature that of the shoe will do or influence. So I think if you go to a specialized store, often the people that are serving you are runners themselves that wear the shoes and they can give you a bit more of an insight. And I think that kind of comes down to, it kind of touches on when we get referrals as well. Like you might get a very, very good podiatrist, like Tom DeCanna, for example.
Thank you.
Anyone that comes in with one of those pieces of paper, I'm like, we're on. Like the job is done. I trust like Tom's an elite business.
Michael, and the question is the job done? You know, is it really done? You get sometimes that referral pad come through the door. What's the most ridiculous thing you've had come from a podiatrist or referral that you're like, oh mate, this makes no sense, but and you've either
we
had
want
to
names. We want names.
Had to turn around.
I've had some shockers, and this is where there's a huge divide, I think. Or not a huge divide, but you might get a podiatrist that's seen like a rep from brand A, brand B, brand C 10 years ago, and we'll use a shoe. Look at the Vomero. So, we'll use the Kayano, just something that the listeners will probably know quite well. The Kayano, over the past 5 years, changes foams, changes trusset piece shape and stiffness and everything. So where the shoe sits in terms of what was probably more categorized as like motion control, stability, neutral, like clear cut, established categories 10 years ago, say, now a lot of shoes. No, we'll use the adrenaline. Sorry, I'm going all over the show. But the adrenaline. You can have heaps of densities of foam in the medial post, and now it's got guide rails. So that shoe might have been coupled with two other shoes from other brands 5 years ago, but now it's coupled with other models. So you might get a podiatrist that's like, okay, I'm housing an orthotic. I just want cushion, high offset, neutral shoes, and you're like, sweet, okay. And they hand you the customer hands you the piece of paper, and they've got Mizuno Wave Inspire 17, the Nike Peg 38. You're like, yeah, sweet, okay. And then Brooks Glycerin 19. And then you're like, hold up, like this person's paying a lot of money. I need to go and see this medical professional because they're obviously in some sort of pain, or they're not going to see a podiatrist for fun. And this podiatrist has given them options, and their word is like gospel. And they come into the shoe store, and they're like, we have to somehow break those barriers and say, yeah, look, I don't want to discredit your podiatrist, but the Wave Inspire is a stability shoe, or it's not a neutral shoe. Like, that's going to, depending on what your orthotic's doing, it's going to counter whatever. So, yeah, that's when you've got to choose your words carefully and sort of make sure podiatrists are, I've had a few curly ones like that, just very rogue, like a very rogue Hoka model coupled with some daily trainers, and I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know where this train of thought's going from the.
I think Julian called it the Hail Mary. Every now and then, a podiatrist will refer for a Hoka just as a Hail Mary, just in case it was going on.
I can't help you, but maybe this shoe will.
Yeah.
But if you don't like it, try these other 7 shoes that I know in my head of, but that's it. I don't know what they are. I just remember the names. So I'll write them all down.
And what I've seen, like, I've helped the guys at Pace, like, as I've, because I love running and I'm interested in, like, the what's on the market at the moment, and I run in all the shoes. Like, it's quite nice keeping up to date, and now that I've been selling shoes for, like, 4 years, you see how versions update and how they differ, and if I'll skip that version because I know what foam is coming out in the next version, things like that. It's quite interesting that I've helped train a few of the new staff in how to sell shoes. Good example is not selling them off the wall and, like, getting people to try the shoes on, and they might be like, oh, I like the feeling of this. And then you can say, oh, okay, we'll go with this type of foam, something maybe not as firm, something a bit softer, things like that. But some new staff, they struggle to grasp, like, the broad concepts, and they might get a little overwhelmed because there is a lot going on. I lost my train of thought about what I was going to say. Keep rambling. What was the initial question?
Tommy, how about we talk about what you're rolling now, Sam? I want to hear what you like in a shoe. Tell us this month, like, 3 new shoes you busted out this month.
Okay, this particular one here. I've not owned this brand of running shoe before, but it had a little bit of success on the weekend. Yeah, on the weekend, Molly Sider was wearing this brand.
Ooh.
I like it. So this is not the Elite. This is the Deviate Nitro Spectrum color. So this guy's got a 4-foot carbon plate or carbon infused plate. And I did a, I think it was a 10K tempo on these guys. Pretty heavy compared to my favorite shoe ever, which I'll show you.
I want to see it.
So is that like an Endorphin Speed? No, is that a Speed?
Yeah, it would be the heavy version of an Endorphin Speed. But it's only a 4-foot carbon plate. And it's got a TPU stabilizing plate on the back. So,
What's the foam in that? Is that like a nitrogen infused?
Yeah, it's a nitrogen infused.
Yeah.
Does it feel close to the Speed? Was it a bit heavier or a bit firmer? Or
nah, I actually, when I first put it on my Strava, so I put all my shoes on my Strava just so I can keep track of the mileage. Yeah. And I described it on my first run, if an 880 had a carbon 4-foot plate.
Wow.
Yeah. That's inspiring. Pretty stable and reliable sort of training shoe then.
Yeah. I think for me, and probably for all of us, like, we rotate so many shoes that we're lucky to, like, cherry pick what we want in a shoe when we buy them or get given them. And I wouldn't be selling this as too much of a versatile shoe in terms of, like, if someone's coming into a store for a shoe that they could use for everything, I think it might be a bit aggressive in terms of how stiff it is up the front. It wouldn't be super durable, versatile in that sense. But for a well-trained runner, I think, like, I quite like this. This is my theory on where this sits in my rotation. Using this in, like, some of my longer workouts as my warm-up, maybe I do a 10K tempo and then cool down all in one run. So on race day, I can put my go-to racing shoe, which is just Next Percent. So that feels so much lighter because that one is noticeably heavier. Obviously, at, like,
why would you
use the speed? Sorry, you go, Noose.
Oh, well, my question is, why wouldn't you wear a Saucony Speed for that instead?
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. But,
to be honest, I use the Speeds for pretty much all types of run, like every single Sunday run. If I like running reasonably fast or like higher aerobic range. So like 3:40s to 4 minutes on most of my Sunday runs. So I always wear these. And then most of my workouts, I'll use a pair of these. I've only got one pair of the twos, but I've got five pairs of version one. And they just last so long.
Like you're doing a lot of work in those Speeds. Why would you wear the Speed over the Pro? I know the plate's a bit different, but you know what? You want to wear a bit more flexibility in a long run, or you just don't want to wear the carbon for a long run, or
yeah, I'm probably just a bit scared to wear the stiff carbon plate for that long. I try to barely touch carbon plates, to be honest, except for race day. Just keep the like really nice stuff for race day. And I just want the shock absorbing aspect of the PB foams that we're seeing and how fun they are and how fast they feel. But because that plate is like so much more flexible, and I'll show you my wear pattern actually. Like I strike pretty much just there.
Yeah.
So I just want like a little bit more flexibility in the shoe. And yeah. I think I've worn the Pros maybe 40K in total. And I've only got version one, but I wore them for a 10K when I first got them out in Manly. We had like quite a hilly 10K. And I had to take them off. I crossed the line, had to take them off. My feet were so sore. Like such a good shoe. Yeah.
Like hot feeling. Like very hot. Yeah. Yeah, I think we get that with carbon plated shoes. I noticed that quite a bit, actually.
That's what I got recently in the Alpha Fly.
Yeah, I noticed that specifically in the Pro as well, actually doing some like 30 to 40 minute hard runs in them. You heat up a bit in those carbon plates. So,
why is it better? Tell us why. The
Speeds. Yeah, I mean, it's probably like I always thought it was like, you know, when you hit the ground, for example, you compress the foam, it doesn't release quite as quick. So you've always got pressure against your foot, doesn't really get a bit of respite. And so you just especially pressure against your vessels and nerves for that long period of time. Whereas sometimes you're running in the foams that sort of compress and release a bit more. There's a bit more respite from the actual pressure of the tissue against the foam.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So you might have another theory, Tommy. You Sydney guys have different theories.
A lack of joint extension. I think that's really going to alter stresses around the foot. So you're not getting as much movement. You're not getting with less movement, you're probably getting alteration in pressure or movement around blood vessels and nerves. Yeah, I had muscle fatigue. I had like, so I feel like it was just because I wasn't, my big toe wasn't bending. For some reason, the muscles were working harder. So I think the stiffness just, you get less joint extension.
You mean you're intrinsic?
You need to get the arm for another shot though, Tommy. I reckon you're in a bad mood that day. So
nah, I'm not wearing it again. I'm done.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Done. Right. No.
Fair enough.
You're a grumpy old man.
That's it.
Next percent two for your next marathon.
What's that?
You're just in the next percent two next marathon.
Yeah, definitely.
No alphas.
Nah,
you're not going to go to an Essex?
That's my second favorite shoe. Like, yeah, I would wear the Metaspeed Sky over the Alpha Fly. Yeah, definitely.
Huge.
Interesting.
So, funny. Interesting. We had a chat with a guy called Chris Cook yesterday, and Chris listens to this show, and he's a footwear designer from Nike. He's worked on a lot of big projects. He's currently working on the Vaporfly Next Percent 3. And he was talking about, one of the questions we had for him was, why were there so many Alpha Flies? Why were there so many Vaporflies versus Alpha Flies in the Olympic marathon? And He said he didn't know exactly why. One of the other ladies on the call who works at Nike, she's a head of I think she was head of like ladies footwear or something. She mentioned that a lot of the feedback from the elites was that they just changing pace a little bit. Like they thought the race would be a little bit more sporadic, so they wanted something that was a little snappier. And that was actually the feedback from Kipchoge. He likes the Alpha Fly, and he said if he gets time trial style races where, like Vienna Breaking Two, where it's all the one pace and he doesn't have sharp corners, then he'll wear the Alpha Fly. But the Vaporfly is better if there's surges in the race and if he's turning corners and he needs to accelerate quickly. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
It's more aggressive.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Like I embarrassingly ran a duathlon the other week in a pair of Alpha Flies, and the course is like 600 meters out and back five times, like a 5K course. And so hairpins with the Alpha Fly, the shoe almost came off my foot around the hairpins, and you just can't accelerate with that much stacked shoe beneath your foot as well. But once you're up and rolling, it's just like the momentum factor to it, you know? It makes sense what he says. I find that with the Adidas. The Adidas, I'm starting to warm to the Pro, but I find that because it's quite high stack off the ground and it's a bit, I feel much more on stilts. I find like if I need to get up the pace again, I need to work to get up the pace. But once I'm up there, it feels fantastic.
You also had those dumb elastic laces in, which wouldn't help going around a corner.
Yeah. Life as a multi-sport athlete,
right? It was embarrassing.
All right, back to Sam. I want to know what skill sets are important to sell, you know, specialty shoes in the running industry. What do you need? What sort of skill sets? Is it long hair, nice moustache, or is it you know, is it academic knowledge, or is it being a runner?
Yeah, I think I've touched on a couple of things like earlier on. I think you definitely need to know as much as you can about what's been on the market in the past few years and where shoes sit. I think, yeah, it's kind of hard because we've been told there's a clear distinction between like neutral shoes and stability shoes over the past few decades. So it's quite hard for people coming into the shoe world and seeing all these different midsoles and materials. And they're like, some people think they're stability shoes and neutral shoes. And then some people think some stable shoes are more neutral. And I think the more you can educate yourself on how shoes design, like the geometry of it and how it's meant to influence your foot and your knee and your hip, I think you'll do better in helping people choose the right shoe in that sense. Like, yeah, essentially the more you're educated on shoes, you can't really wing it with specialty running retail. I think that's what I'm trying to word.
There's no advice there. But do you find that people really sort of seek your personal opinion? Like you have a lot of shoes in rotation, and that's got to help you. You put your foot in the shoe, you run them at slow pace, moderate pace. That's got to be a big thing. Or do you think it's more the education from the reps, or you think you take a little bit of that on, put the shoe on, get the experience yourself, and then suddenly you've got your education for the shoe?
Yeah, I often find, like, obviously reps, their job is to sell you the product that is next to their name. So, yeah, they obviously will tell you every magical piece of a shoe, and you kind of need to break down, like, the important aspects or what's actually relevant per customer that's coming in.
Very nice shoe you have now.
Yeah, I should have held this one up, but I know you guys, like, or a couple of you froth it, so I don't want to bring it up. I was like, oh, we'll chuck some Pumas in the mix. Yeah, so I think the more you can strip down the shoe and what's actually relevant to the person's goals and what they're actually using the shoe for, I think, like, conversations are the biggest thing. Like, there's obviously out there in certain retail outlets, there's gizmos and things that can measure your feet and give you all this data, but unless you know what the data's actually telling you.
What's the biggest thing, Hopper, that's changed, like, from when you started working at pace to now that you reckon you've that you do differently, like thought process or the actual fitting process? Is there any big shifts that you've had over those years?
I think, like, where we work or where I work, we don't actually do like a technical gait analysis, like any video analysis. I think early on before I started, there was a few treadmills in the stores and iPads and things. And when I started, there was like, unless you really know what you're seeing on a video recording, it's often hard to relay that and what the shoes, how the shoe is helping you or not helping you based off a video, unless you know what you're actually looking at. So pretty much the whole time I've been there, like the conversation you have and like what you mentioned that are people asking my opinion on what I've been using and whether I like this shoe for that reason. And I think, yeah, obviously reps tell me like the materials and the benefits of each shoe. And I sort of take the shoe for usually a long run initially. So I spend a bit of time in it and then make my own judgment and just tell customers straight up and I make sure it's a personal reflection of the shoe. Cause obviously I'm striking so much like that. Whereas a lot of beginner runners are striking quite heel orientated or further back. So their sensation in a certain shoe is probably going to be different to how I perceive a shoe. And especially if there's a lot more tech going on in this part of the shoe back. Yeah, I think majorly maybe touching on when I said podiatrists, obviously giving referrals and things, and then us being the front of the retail, if you can sort of get someone to trust how much you know about the running shoe industry, then that's a huge thing, because obviously you're spending a lot of money buying running shoes and you're buying shoes because you want to be more active or you want to train for a specific goal. I like to look at it like if I got into cycling, I wouldn't jump online and just buy $1,000 bike just without knowing anything. I'd probably ask like the guys that work there, because if you work at like a tennis pro shop, you're going to know the best tennis rackets. Cycling shop, you're going to know the best bikes. So you wouldn't just buy the most expensive bike, which might just not be the best commuter bike, which is what I'm chasing. Like you just cut to the chase, like what I'm going to use the shoe for this run, this gym sesh, walking my dog. What are some shoes? I'm looking at this price. And then you can sort of cut down the 50 shoes you got on the wall down to like 10 shoes. So yeah, I think I haven't really seen a major change in the past 4 years from how I've served people. Like it's generally just been majorly a conversation. And seeing
that's a good point. I think as a podiatrist, for example, like when I started back over a decade and a half ago, you know, the knowledge in footwear was, you know, driven through podiatry, and there weren't many people who were purely in running, working in running specialty retail at the time. But there are so many runners who have been in the field for 5 to 10 years as runners themselves, working in specialty retail, just because, you know, it's easier to sell shoes. They have experience and people can relate to them as well. Do you think perhaps practitioners don't spend enough time speaking to the runners for their education, and they spend a bit more too much time sort of just detailing in the history and academic knowledge? Because I found these days I give less knowledge to my patient now and send them to the right location, because I'm pretty happy with the knowledge that comes from these people who are working at the store. Because, you know, they run 100 miles a week in the shoes and they live and breathe it. So you come across a guy who just lives and breathes shoes, I'm pretty optimistic that you'll know what's going on more so than, you know, than what a textbook or a paper will say about shoe prescription these days.
Yeah, for sure. I think you lost me.
Hey.
Oh, no.
No, you're there.
So I think my computer froze.
Yeah.
Can you say the last one again? Sorry, Nita.
Do you think perhaps maybe refer us to special retail, don't spend enough time speaking to runners more so to get knowledge on, you know, how to prescribe shoes and what the feel is? Because you guys are selling shoes very subjectively, which is like, you know, by experience and by feel, which I think is the way to do it, as opposed to these objective measures that don't seem to be associated to selling shoes, like foot pronation and supination, for example.
Yeah, that's actually a trend I would love to see, is like probably more close-knit interactions between the actual medical professionals, like you guys, the pods and the guys on the shop front, rather than, yeah, what you do. Like you obviously know who is working in a shoe store that is a runner, and they know what's out there and what's actually going to be a good option. But yeah, if you, if podiatrists can visit, instead of just taking what reps say, if they can come into shoe stores and get a broader picture of what's actually out there in terms of neutral shoes, like talking about, I actually made a graph, a big chart, sorry, of all the heel to toe drops and a bit of a spectrum from your racing shoes through to like cushion lightweight, through to slightly more stable. And I did add a column of motion control, just as
small column now,
very small. So that's actually probably a better way to answer that question of like a shift. There was in this chart I made, there's very heavily weighted neutral side, and like the closer you went to motion control, it's getting very true. And I very much like the Kayano light and the Nimbus light ideas. Even the sort of guide rail system from Brooks is quite a good shift from that really dense medial posting, and now it's slightly less corrective and the stability's there if you need it. I always use the bowling alley gutter rail analogy just to break it down. Like if you're rolling in and resupinating nicely, you hit a strike, and then if you're rolling in a bit too much, you might be able to feel that medial wedge of the guide rail propping up, and then you'll get a strike. So I kind of like the Kayano light idea, how we've gone away from these dense medial foams and trussic pieces in the traditional Kayano, and now it's more geometry that's like volume and stability provided through like a stable base. I really like that side of things. Yeah, if I could design the running shoe industry, I'd love to just have like a bunch of variations of the 880 and send, if people are getting injured, they can come and see you guys and you can give them personalized orthotics and we're away laughing.
So Hopper, tell us what shoes you wore this month. Tell us what you're training for, what shoes you're wearing this whole month.
I don't really know what I'm training for at the moment, because after Goldie, I was like, I'll stop doubling. I'll eat a bit more, sleep a bit more, just try and maintain. I've just been running like 130K weeks, just like this, rather than my 170, 190 injury. But yeah, I usually was doing, I don't know, on average between 140 and 150, 160. So I've dropped that completely, because every 5 minutes a race is still going ahead. And then like Gold Coast 4 days earlier, it got cancelled. So you never know. I was going to do Sunshine Coast, but that's no go. Yeah, who knows? Hopefully Melbourne. Who knows, though? But, yeah, I've been jogging. I just got these recently. I know you guys have had them for ages.
What do you think of the Invincible?
Yeah, I actually, the day I got them, I messaged you, Tom, and I was like, what are your thoughts? I know nothing about these except that there's a whole
what
bunch.
What did I say? I forgot what I said. Did I trash it?
You're like, don't do more than 20% of your running.
Worst bloke to ask about this shoe. Worst bloke to ask.
That's good advice. Yeah.
But Hopper hits the right spot of the shoe, though. Like, it'll feel fun where you hit the shoe.
Yeah, how good's that? Whenever I see a lateral flare, I'm like, it's designed for Sam Hopper. How good. Yeah, so I awkwardly run in so many of the shoes you guys wear. Like Nimbus Light 2. That is nice. One of my favorite shoes ever. I love this shoe. When I was doing quite a few doubles, like after standing all day and doing like a morning run, standing all day, I chuck these on, and it's such a breathable, lightweight upper. I don't know. They just feel super light as well.
They're easy.
Good one. Two from two right now.
Yeah.
Puma, miss. Keep going.
These guys?
Got number twos.
Yeah.
Compared to number one.
What's that? Sorry? How do I compare them?
Compared to number one.
I like the lockdown a bit better. I think, so this is a funny story. I hope none of my customers that I've served listen to this, but when I moved to Australia, I was wearing US 11.5 and 11 shoes, depending on brand. And then now I wear US 10.
Oh,
and that's 4 years. So I went through like a year of realizing you shouldn't have, or not a year, I'll say a few weeks of realizing I should not have as much room at the front as I did. And I think what happened was when I was at uni, I was just really cheap, so frugal. I'd just buy the cheap shoes online. And they would always be these like fringe sizes or like a bit longer than what I need. And I'd just wear them. Didn't know anything about shoe fit. Come over here and, oh, who was working? Oh, my first ever shift at Pace was in Crow's Nest and Will Austin Cray was working there. Oh, yeah. And he measured my foot and he's like, mate, you need a 10 and a half. Because one of my feet was like a US 10-ish and then 9.5. In the E width, like between a D and a 2E. And he's like, yeah, 10 and a half, spot on. So I bought some Peg 35s on the spot. Went for a run. I was like, whoa, I can run so much faster. Like, running is so good. And then I think the Nova Blast, I got Nova Blast 1, I got in a 10 and a half, and that was the last 10 and a half I bought. I think my foot... In that particular upper, I was just sliding forward on my shorter foot like so much, even though it was like a full size larger.
It was a long fit.
It was, yeah.
It was a long fit. The Nova one was, and a lot of volume in the forefoot, I found, like height wise.
Yeah. So I've just actually last week given them away. They just sat in my room after like 300K. I just, like a lot of shoes.
That's enough for a shoe. Come on. Yeah. That's enough.
Yeah. And for us, we're obviously like loving the new stuff that's coming out. So why hang out in the shoe too long when there's more stuff to try? But yeah, I really like these. I wore them this morning actually. Yeah, it took maybe like a couple of runs this time around for me to enjoy them again. The first one I was like, oh, I don't really, I remember the Blast Bone being a bit nicer, but a bit more poppy.
It took, it took about 50K before the number twos actually felt better for me. It was weird. Yeah. I didn't have that. In the number ones, they felt great out of the box.
I've done three 40-minute runs in them, and I haven't enjoyed any of those runs yet. So you're saying it's a bit firmer, gets softer or what?
Yeah, I reckon. It's almost because there's that, like, that rock at the forefoot. Like, as soon as you compress it a bit and loosens up, I was, like, rolling so nicely this morning. I was a huge fan of the Epic Reacts, and pretty gutted when they upgraded. I've still got so many pairs, and I remember, like, I hope my bosses don't listen to this, but I went out to the Nike outlet mall just because older models, you can't get them like boots or anything. So I just went out to the outlet mall, and these were like $50, and I think it's because they've got pink on them, but it's next position, I think, now. But I got, three pairs for $50. I've still got, like, these are barely worn.
Yeah. So, and they go a long way. They go a lot more than you think as well. You can get a lot out of them.
That's what I like, the Infinity? That's the next thing I'm going to hold up. But I'll just touch back on the Epic Reacts. That's another point. Like, people might come into a shoe store to ask if their shoe is worn out. And they'll solely base it off, like, outer... Like
exposed
midsole is so durable. Like Epic React, you run 5K, it's scuffed as 850K later, looks the exact same. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
But as soon as this came out, I was like, that is my shoe. Froth the Epic React, more durable, more grippy. But I just really, I think I was at Falls Creek the year they brought a bunch up. I think Sam Strutt and Molly and the Eakins brought a whole size run up, and you had to listen to the, you went to a little seminar and they gave you a pair to wear for a couple of days, and we gave them back and then got evacuated. It was a pretty crap year at Falls Creek. But yeah, I tried them on. I was like, this is meant to be unreal, but I didn't like it. And it was solely down to the upper. And then, version 2 came out. Obviously, it's a bit more cushioned around the collar, and I love that. And I love the weight of the shoe because we run in so many light shoes. I just like a lot of volume and light weight, but this is my heavy. This is like one of my old suitable.
That's good now that you're size 10 instead of size 11 and a half. There's a bit less weight there.
Yeah.
How many people have you had come in the store, Hopper, that have done that? Have you actually had anyone that's a size and a half big? It's normally the other way, right?
Like, I back myself, especially after the year, I back myself on fitting someone Swisher Brennick, and sometimes I've measured their feet and I'm like, wait, what? You're wearing this shoe and your foot's this size, and I'm literally like holding back my expression. I just go and grab some shoes, put on their feet, and they're like, oh my gosh, this is insane.
You don't even tell them, just put it on their foot and say it's a size shorter than what you've been wearing or whatever.
Often I do that. I pick and choose what I tell people at certain points throughout a sale. So you often get people come in, they're like, I'm a US 11 and a half. I've always been 11 and a half. And you measure their feet off and you're like, oh, you should not be in that size. Well, not that you shouldn't, but you would be better suited to a shorter size potentially. And then you say for a particular, say a Clifton 7, you might be a 9.5 in that, and then you put them in a 1080 version 10, so like last year's models, and maybe a US 10. So you put them both in their feet, and they're like, oh, they both feel good. I don't know which one to go with. And so they're two different sizes, and that's where had you brought out two, like just 10s and told them that, they might in their head tick over like, oh, like I don't want these. They're not 11.5. So
it's really rare though that someone goes down in size, like from what I've seen. Just based on
Often they're wearing shoes where their toes are crunched up.
Yeah, that's
we should have used that.
I reckon eight out of 10 times someone comes
100%.
In too small. I think it's probably because they haven't been fitted properly. They like the look of a smaller shoe on their foot. Maybe they haven't done enough where they're sensitive enough to the small fit, but then they start running a bit more and they're like, oh, my toes are starting to hurt. Or the shoes are getting shorter over time. Like I reckon even like how long have you been working at Pace for, Sam? What did you say, 2018?
Yeah.
3 years. Shoes have got smaller since then. Maybe a quarter size across the board.
I reckon so.
Yeah, so say an average quarter size, then that means that a lot of people will go up a half over that 3 year time, and they're shallower too. Sometimes you can have the length, but the shallowness makes them shorter. And so it's hard to buy online now because of the size differences. Yeah,
and I'm nervous. Like, I'm not nervous about it, but I think a lot of people are orientated around using their phones and apps and things. And the day we have an app where you can scan your foot and get a shoe made personally and delivered via a drone or something, that's not going to be a good day, because you lose that like specialty retail aspect of getting your cry and compare from other stores and other brands.
The fit's the key. The fit's the number one. All the other stuff we don't quite know about why people love foam, the stack height, the movement patterns. You just can't solve that puzzle without trying it on and getting the feel. But the fit's the one thing that, you know, that you guys provide that you just can't get by a 3D scan, etc., and online app. I agree with that 100%.
Fit and comfort are like the two biggest factors for sure.
Mm.
Well, that's what I think. I think if you've nailed the fit and the shoe's comfortable, you're most of the time, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have at least an all right time in that shoe. Without injuring yourself too much,
So if you run a race tomorrow, Hopper, what are you wearing? Are you wearing the Next Percent 2 or what are you wearing?
I've never actually put a Next Percent 2 on. I've just got, because I'm frugal, I've just got Next Percent 1. But because all my long runs and my long workouts have been in the Endorphin Speeds, I actually had the thought, I was like, oh, why don't I just wear this in the race? Then I thought, nah, just wear the Next Percent. Yeah, it'll be the Next Percent.
Have you tried any other super shoes that match the Next Percent for you?
I try, because of how rare the Meta Speed range is, I tried a 10 on in our store.
The Sky or the Edge?
The Sky, sorry. Yeah, the Sky. Yeah. I never actually got to try the Edge. They just went out as soon as they came in. Yeah, so I don't know. I heard good things about them, but I don't know if I would wear them over the Next Percent.
Mm.
I liked the feel of the FuelCell RC Elite.
Yep.
Vision 2. Yeah. They look cool.
Yeah, I haven't tried them yet. They look high stack. They look nice.
Yeah. Very soft.
Mm.
Pretty cushion.
Pretty cushion.
All right. Nito, let's talk about your shoes. What you got?
I've been running around about sort of 60 to 70 Ks per week, and I've been rotating my mileage shoes between still the New Balance Vongo, which I reckon I'm starting to enjoy more now. It's about 100 Ks. It's a bit of a firmer shoe, so maybe it's getting a little bit softer with time. But we were lucky enough to receive some Mizunos this month, and we received three. The Mizuno Wave Sky 5 and the Mizuno Wave Rider 25 and the Mizuno Wave Rebellion. I've worn them all. I've worn the Sky the most. The Sky is their top-end cushioning shoe. And, you know, I've done maybe about 100 Ks in that shoe overall, maybe not quite 100, maybe 90. And it's definitely more enjoyable now than what it was at the start. I think I actually don't mind the cushioning in it. It's a bit heavier. I remember you speaking on the main show, Julian, about maybe just walking around in that shoe a little bit more often to try and soften it up. I remember like jogging down to the Uni Loop to do a workout, and the jog down, it felt so comfortable. And then I did a hard workout, my calves got sore, and then I ran back, and because my calves were sore, the shoe was just too heavy for me on the way back home. And I was like, oh, I wish I had a Nike Zoom X Invincible right now, or whatever, to jog back home. So I think if I didn't weigh 68 kilos, I weighed more like 78 kilos, I'd find the midsole a bit more plush in the Wave Rider. But I still have taken it for a couple of long runs when I've been feeling good. And if you hit the forefoot, I do like it. So it's for me, it's a shoe that I think I'll probably need more time. The issue is that, like Hopper mentioned, we've got so many shoes we're rotating between. I get a shoe to around about 250 Ks, 300 Ks. I don't wear it anymore. And I reckon this shoe will be really, really comfortable from 200 to 400 Ks. So stuck between a rock and a hard place with that shoe. So what did you boys think of the Sky?
I like the Sky. I had the Sky in 2018, I think, and I didn't like it then. So it just still, to me, it felt like classic Mizuno, real firm. The upper was like, felt old school, like with seams and stitches here and there. It was a bit crinkly on the upper. But yeah, new Sky, it's like, for me, it feels softer and bouncier. It's like the softest Mizuno by far.
Do one of you guys have it in front of you to show?
Yeah,
good. Yeah, the seamless upper is fantastic. It's a really nice upper. It's relatively stiff, but once you pop up on the forefoot, it's still, I still find it's pretty responsive. It probably needs a bit more of a rocker perhaps to try and, I think maybe that's why when your calves get a bit sore, decent it would probably flex. Need a little, decent flex, yeah.
Yeah, there's no plastic plate, so it's a foam plate. That Energy Core, if you turn... Tommy, just show us again. Turn it upside down. Feel that red foam in there.
Yeah.
Feel that bit.
Real soft. Yes. Real soft.
Yeah. See how that's like really cushioned. That's the soft bit. That's the poppy bit in the shoe. But for me, like just walking in it, Tommy, I'm going to call you back again. Show us the rear foot of the shoe. show us the outer sole pods. See how they're segmented medial to lateral? Because I pronate quite a bit, that medial pod there seems to collapse underneath me really easily. And I feel I don't feel like it. I know I pronate a ton on heel strike in this shoe just because it's not quite stable enough for me. Yeah.
You must pronate a lot.
I do. Mm. And it's the same with the rider, that segmented piece as well. I need more of a all contact outer sole there. Oh, yeah. Nita's got it.
Yeah.
So those pieces can compress individually rather than disperse the load?
Yeah. It's, I guess, the difference between the Sky and the Rider through here. The Sky is lower stack. And to be honest, I've tried on the 24 historically, and the 25 feels much more plush than the 24, specifically in the forefoot. The rear foot still feels firm. Like, it is a firm shoe. It feels traditional Mizuno to me. The Mizuno Energy, which is the midsole, you probably just read that. While it's a little bit more plush in the forefoot, I still find it's a little bit firm for me as well. So I guess the people that love Mizuno will still love this shoe, and they'll probably find that they'll gravitate to a slightly more plush shoe. And Hopper might agree that people gravitate to a slightly softer shoe because they've probably been wearing softer shoes in the past 3 to 4 years for what's been on the market. So for me, going from so many soft shoes recently, going to some firm shoes, I guess maybe I'm not the perfect person to say that the Mizuno Rider is a shoe that I could put on a soft surface like a dirt or a grass and not mind it. But once I'm on the roads, it just, you know, I feel like the forefoot's soft, it bottoms out a bit in the forefoot. And if I hit the rear foot, which I don't often, it is quite firm. So the Sky is definitely a shoe that I would pick for my volume, but the Sky, the Rider is not a shoe that I can probably wear consistently and enjoy for long runs, just the way I move.
Tommy, you been wearing the Rider?
Yeah, I've probably done about 3 runs in the Rider, to be honest. So, and I mean, I don't know if it's going to get any better, Nitta, if you've done more than that, but it's, to me, it is firm. It's initially I thought, yeah, this is not bad for what I would associate Mizuno to, which is normally quite firm and stiff. But I don't know. I'm just finding it still quite firm, even with the new Energy foam. It's pretty firm. It's not that enjoyable for me. I'm all on the road, so.
And I'm in my head, like Julian and Sam might be able to answer this a bit better, but, you know, you're comparing it to a New Balance 880, a Brooks Ghost, maybe an ASICS Gel Pursuer or a Cumulus maybe, perhaps in that category. It obviously compares with them. People that love Mizuno who probably prefer a firmer ride, dare I say having a higher BMI, a bit more body mass, might be probably the key for this shoe. But it's tough for me to say if I have someone come in who's, you know, my body weight and say, oh, you know, you're going to wear this shoe over these other shoes. If you put those 4 shoes on, you know, will you walk away with the Mizuno Rider? The answer is I'd say if you like your Mizuno, you might be stepping up to the Sky and paying an extra $40, $60 or whatever it is.
Perhaps. Yeah. I still worry about the load on the back of the shoe for a walker, given that it's so segmented, and I've seen those one-piece crash pads collapse so quickly compared to the rest of the shoe. You find, if you show it this again, Nitta, if that's all right. See that piece, can you just point it out to anyone watching?
About this bit through here separated?
Yeah, so you know the little medial piece there. So, yeah. That piece is like, that piece is really sensitive to my pronation because I'll load that area when I'm landing. And that will compress over time at a greater rate than what's around it. Yeah. And so my level of eversion is worse and worse as the shoe goes on.
Yeah. And the difference between the Rider and that the Inspire that you might stock, they just fill in this area through here with a bit more plastic, right? So it can't compress as much. So it accommodates that pronation angle that if you are everting at the rear foot a lot more. The Rider does feel like it does maybe move a bit more, but I just don't hit that part of the shoe. So tough for me to say. If you're walking in it, you're more than likely going to probably use that segmented or that decoupling off the midsole, and it might cause a few issues. So,
But from
the converse, though, if you don't have like abnormal mechanics, like too
abnormal, norm,
that's probably a good thing because it's like giving you like probably a softer feel.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's more sort of a natural sort of movement potentially. Yep. So I'd say for most people, it's probably a good feature, maybe. Yeah. But for you, mate, it's probably not.
The question I have for you guys, because we need to be mindful, there are a lot of Mizuno lovers out there, and they've been wearing Mizunos for years, and they gravitate back to them. You know, is it the firm ride they go into? And because the landscape of footwear is gravitating to softer shoes, you know, do you think that sort of shoe sale is a bit tougher to get in retail now, like selling a firmer shoe? Or do you think people just come in because they've had Mizuno historically with success and they'll gravitate straight back to the model above? Or
I often find, like, you'll have people that come in, they're like, oh, I've had a Mizuno, and you search their sales history and they've had every model of Inspire for the past 10 years. And they're like, oh, this shoe works for me. I don't want to look at anything else. And it's typically your Japanese brands like ASICS and Mizuno, like your Kayano or your Nimbus or your Rider and your Inspire, just your black and white like dailies that people, they just stick with. So it's probably for Mizuno, it's probably good that they stay kind of firmer. So there's something on the market that there is catering or someone is catering for the person that does like a firmer shoe. Because like you say, like everything's going so much more volume and softer. So
I think that you're right there. The firmness is a niche category now and someone's got to cater. But I think Mizuno lovers tend to enjoy the fit of the shoe, that really strong heel cup, and they're pretty flat through the midfoot, so no real like contour, and they don't feel any arches like some Brook shoes. You can tend to feel a little bit more through there. I reckon the fit of the shoe is what a Mizuno wearer loves more than the actual firmness.
Got it.
That's a good comment.
So that's what Cornsey's after always when he's wearing his Mizunos. I remember dating back. I reckon I had medial shin pain when I was off the back of maybe first year uni, and I had the Mizuno Wave Nirvana, I think it was. It was like a heavily posted rear foot shoe, but the forefoot had like a lot more compliant foam in it, so it was quite soft in the forefoot, but the actual plastic sort of finished around about where your metatarsal head's finished. And I reckon I did maybe 1,500 Ks in that shoe, and I remember finishing it up, and I reckon there was still outsole. There was definitely midsole that was left, like, they were shoes that were very sustainable, and I reckon it was the they had a neutral version at the time as well. It wasn't the Sky, it was before the Sky. I can't remember what it was. The Enigma. That's it. Yeah, and it was very similar as well, and I had a lot of patients that just stayed through there, and that was almost the first shoe people were wearing just prior to when the Hoka came out to sort of reduce a bit of first MPJ pain or midfoot pain because it was quite stiff using the plate.
The plate went through under the first met.
Absolutely, yeah. And so I remember referring that shoe to people to try and reduce some first MPJ loading before the rocker-soled shoes or the stiff shoes came out. So there's a bit of a history there with Mizuno doing stuff that they probably didn't realise they were doing, being able to use for prescription.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Rebellion.
Well, I've done two runs in the Rebellion so far. Do you want to kick off, Julian, with the Rebellion or?
The Rebellion now is with a friend of mine. Who put it on and loved it, which was a slight contrast to what I put it on and felt. So the Rebellion is the super shoe answer from Mizuno. It's their highest, like, it sits top shelf on their racing range.
You want to show it, Tommy? Yeah.
Oh, you got it there. Tom, you're good tonight.
I'm at home tonight, so I got all my shoes.
Can you tell us about the plate, Moose?
The plate. Yeah, tell us about the percentage benefit from this plate.
There's some stats around the plate. Hey, you haven't even worn it. Your tag's still on.
Unworn, mate.
Oh, you're going to sell that on eBay or something. Hey, don't do that. You'll snap it.
hey, it's unsnappable,
apparently. Yeah,
so the plate is like a glass kind of composite plate, which is different to like carbon plates and nylon plates. So that's Mizuno's, like, it's thicker through the heel, thinner under the forefoot. It's got a different type of foam in it.
It sort of looks a bit beaded. It almost looks like the TPU midsole if you look up really close to it. It's really tough to tell, but it almost looks like the Boost midsole. But when you poke it, it's a bit firmer, right?
Underfoot, it's firmer as well. What I'm going to do is just pull up some. I'm going to pull up some stats on it, like a sheet, so I don't butcher it.
Let's be honest, with the firmness of Mizuno, there's a couple of factors there, not just the plate. You know, like, the Sky doesn't have the plate, but it still feels semi-firm. And the firmness, you could probably reduce 50% of the outsole, and you could probably reduce the firmness for all these Mizuno shoes a little bit, I reckon. So, and the workout I did on the Rebellion, like, I tried everything in it. One day I went out and jogged in it, I did a tempo in it, and then I did some heel sprints in it as well. And I remember Julian mentioning that it was a pretty grippy, like, we were running up this sort of, like,
very, you know, grippy.
And it was the outsole made a really aggressive noise. It had, like, you know, little lugs on it, and it was quite aggressive. Once I was up on the balls of my feet, it felt like a relatively fast shoe when you were running at fast pace. I found the rocker's quite late, it's quite aggressive. But it was relatively firm, heel strike, midfoot, or forefoot strike. I could not compress the midsole with the combination of the composite plate and the foam. I was surprised because, like, you push the foam and it sort of felt moderately soft, maybe a little bit firmer than an Endorphin Pro, but I just couldn't compress it on foot. So I definitely feel different to any super shoe that I've worn before, just with the midsole being too firm.
Yeah, so I'll chuck some stats at you. 8 mil drop, men's 235 grams. So around an alpha fly, isn't it? Around an alpha kind of weight. Glass fiber reinforced wave plate, which in contrast to a normal wave plate, it's 1,141% more responsive, which sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
Is that the economy gain we're going to get?
Yeah, that's what you'll take off your marathon time. But the Mizuno Energy Light.
In the science world, that's called torturing the data.
I don't know how you judge responsiveness in a plate, but someone's worked it out. 35% energy return in the foam versus Euphoric, which is the old foam they use. It's not versus like the new energy stuff. So a few stats around it. To me, it feels like a lightweight trainer. Doesn't feel like a super shoe. It feels firmer than that. Feels like if I was going to put on an old pair of Mizuno, you remember the Precision, the Wave Precision?
Yeah.
That was a nice shoe, similar to that underfoot. It doesn't feel like the same sort of like propulsiveness that I get from a foam with like P-backs in it. I think people are ignoring how good P-backs is. And,
absolutely.
And yeah.
So you know, it's the upper in this, right? The upper is a training shoe upper.
Yeah.
It's so reinforced. Like that heel cup is bloody solid. You're not gonna. I can't move it. It's very padded, very stiff.
Yeah, I think you're right. The Precision was a good. I remember when I wore them. I'm like, this feels like the old Elixir, but like a slightly higher off the ground Elixir, which I think was similar. It was like a pretty stiff performance trainer from Mizuno, and it did have those vibes. It had the same outsole, serrated outsole that was grippy. So, you know, there's people that could wear it in there. I just, once again, you know, when you compare it against the other shoes for the same price tag categorically, you got to try and really think, you know, who would you put that shoe into over the other shoes? And it becomes difficult, I reckon. So
it's going to be like a real heavy person that just loves the Mizuno feel, like a firm Arai, but maybe the heavier person that needs a safer option.
Carbon plate market's getting very, very crowded right now. Probably overcrowded, I think. And not everybody needs racing shoes. I'm not sure where this sits in that area, but so that's the Mizuno range done.
Yep.
I'll just quickly go through a couple that I've been wearing.
Yep.
So I've been like running around home a little bit more with lockdown and winter and the weather. This is one shoe that I've been.
Tony.
This is Saucony. We're back with Saucony. This is called the Endorphin Trail. Nice. So you can tell I've been wearing it as well. Obviously, I've got some caked mud stuck in the lugs. This sits in the Endorphin line from Saucony, which is like their fast performance line, but it doesn't have the P-Bax midsole. It's different. It has like a, I'm not even sure what they call it, but it's not the same P-Bax. So you don't get that real poppy lightweight feel. It's got a bit more guts to it, which I think is actually quite nice on a trail. It's got the speed roll technology.
Is it the Power Run midsole or?
Let me tell you what it is. It's not the Power Run.
The Endorphin Pro Range was the Power PB. So it was the infused TPU with so this one might just be TPU without PB or?
This is called Power Run PB, which is weird because it definitely doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, thanks to Pro and the speed.
Yeah.
Is it encased in like a knitting?
It's like the midsole has kind of like a, I don't know what it is. It probably just protects the foam. It's
different as well.
Yeah, maybe. It's definitely like a, it doesn't feel as soft and poppy as when I put my Pro on or when I put my Speed on. It feels different to that. It's a lot more guts to it underneath. I think that's just designed to protect the P-Bax because it's a bit more fragile, the foam is, like when you expose it to like a stick or something.
You don't reckon it's just the outsole that makes it feel firmer?
It could be. It doesn't have a plate. That's one thing it doesn't have. So it's like the other shoes have plates. This one doesn't, but there's a lot of shoe, which makes it rigid and it still feels a little too rigid to me for trails. Yeah. Like it doesn't feel agile enough.
You might sell a few of them and sell her out, though. I reckon the lugs look good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even around here on dirt roads, it's nice. I'm just hoping that it gives a little more.
You would tell them for Centennial Park runners, though, will you, Hopper?
What are you using it for? Is that just an easy day shoe? Yeah,
trail shoe, trail running. So I've been getting on the trails a bit more, single track, that kind of thing. Where you actually need a trail shoe around here. It's not like Sydney or anything. You need a proper trail shoe because the trails are garbage and you're on cambers and it's steep. And so I've got another trail shoe in the mix here. This is the Craft CTM Ultra Carbon.
That's really a trail shoe?
Designed and developed in Sweden, which is pretty cool. It actually says all the info is written on here.
It says,
the color is so sick. I love it.
Yeah,
I wish more brands would take chances by doing crazy shit like this. so it's got a carbon plate in it. It's designed for ultra trail races. So someone that wants to go faster for a long time, the foam is firmer. So to me, it feels a little bit more like some of those non-PBAX race shoes. But it's got this outer sole that is quite sticky and grippy. Mm. You can see like there's obviously an exposed area, but up front, that's really good for around here. I wish it was a little lighter on top. I know you've said the word bottom weighted before. One of you two said that for a shoe. This is a shoe that feels bottom weighted because up top, the upper is really light and it's like one layer. It's just kind of super breathable. There's no like heel cup or anything. But underneath the weight, just you can feel it. So there's quite a bit of guts to the shoe.
That's a knitted.
I use that term bottom weight for the Nike Zoom Fly 2, and you guys rubbished me for it.
Yeah, it's a sip. Hey, this is what I said, the non-PBAX plated shoe. That's what it's like.
There you go. That's what I thought. I was saying it before it was cool, Moose.
It's got a very strong rear foot. You see the rear foot rocker on it? Yeah. If you stand in it, you fall like you feel like you're going backwards.
That's got sacrum written all over it.
I'll be careful then. I'll be careful. But they're my two shoes that I've been wearing and kind of enjoying. They're not
so perfect. You're just running all trail pretty much.
I've been wearing Invincible still. Saucony Endorphin Speed I wore a couple of times. Kayano Light 2. Vongo. I mean, I've been wearing all the shoes, but we've talked about them already.
Light 2, though, is that not a midsole update? That's just
an upper update.
An upper. Okay. Cool. Yeah.
It's a nice upper. Like, it's a bit more plush through the heel cup. That's a great shoe. That's an underrated shoe.
It's a good shoe. I was thinking that.
What about you, Tommy? Everyone's been asking, what's Tommy doing next? Tommy, what's he doing next? He's been in the shape of his life. What's he doing next? And I can feel you sad over there, mate. Tell us how much you've been running. What have you been doing? And
I went to do a session yesterday and I ran to the oval, my usual oval, and I got there, had my spikes in hand, and I was like, I'm just going to do some stretches. I had zero. ended up doing a 30-minute session on the grass. Just doing some yoga in the sun. Seriously, it was sad. It was a real sad morning. I could not get up for it. I haven't had that like in forever. It's a bit sad, really. I realize now that like I do kind of need races to get really up for I still enjoy running, but like sessions and big sessions or big mileage, I need races. And because I've got no hope. I really don't think there's gonna be anything this year. Still running, but I'm gonna be putting big sessions and doing other things, prioritizing other things. But anyway, still running a fair bit, so still can enjoy some shoes. I've actually, you guys give me shit for it lately, but yeah, I have been reverting back to less of a shoe. Mm. So like I can't go back to the Invincible. I overdid it. I think I wore it like
not at all.
No, I haven't worn it for like a month now.
Mm.
I just
sad.
Yeah. It just feels like too much shoe for me. It's like the Alpha Fly. Like I reach a tipping point with midsole thickness and an amount of shoe under me, and Invincible and Alpha have like just passed that tipping point of optimal enjoyment. Yeah, I've realized that. So I've gone. It's a bit like the Infinity and the Epic React. So like, I much prefer the Epic React, and that's obviously a little bit more of a minimal shoe compared to the Infinity. Mm-hmm. Infinity is much sort of chunkier midsole. The V1, they both had like shitty uppers, but the midsole feel. Yeah, so I've actually gone back to you laugh at me again on this one, the Reebok Energy
less sole again.
I bought like three pairs recently, just as the number twos were ending, threes are out now. So anyway,
you blokes are so depressing.
I know, it's sad.
I was hoping you were going to say the Mayflies.
Mayflies. No, when I got like Dragonfly, I'd rather do a session, like a long session in Dragonfly, because it's like, if it's a synthetic, it's softer than the Mayfly. Yeah. I've actually given the I haven't worn the Rebel V2 for ages, so I did like a couple of sessions in Rebel New Balance Rebel V2, and then I hadn't worn it for a while. Like, I wasn't sure what I was going to use it for, but I've gone back to using it as a bit of a daily. So I've done some commutes with it. I did a long run with it last weekend, and I really like it.
Plantar must be okay.
What's that?
Plantar must be okay then.
Plantar's good. I've gone back to it. Like, I can go back to the more minimal stuff now because like plantar's good, tip post is good. So now that my body can handle it, I'm enjoying the less shoe a little bit more again. Like, I've still been running a bit in the Vongo, the New Balance Vongo.
Do you think it's like the Alpha and the Invincible? Do you think you're not liking them because they're so soft? Because, you know, when you're wearing them, they're not a lot of shoe. When you hit the midsole, they compress a lot. Well, definitely the Invincible does as well. Do you think if you went into like an Adios Pro 2, that I feel that's really high up the ground and I can't compress it as much. I wonder if you'd enjoy that as a, you know, as a replacement for the Alpha Fly for some of your sessions. It's high up the ground. It's just a firmer midsole. Or you can, maybe it's just too much.
I don't know, mate, because I still really like the Next Percent. So I'm not sure exactly. I felt like, so when I was running the Alpha, I felt like I was going more up and down than forward. Like, I felt like I was getting heaps of vert. I was like, I was bouncing too much. I just felt like I wasn't moving forward fluidly. I was like, it was just like popping me up. And I just wanted to be a bit more, moving forward rather than being popped up and down.
Well, I've got a ridiculous story then. I went out to the track the other day and I put on the Next Percent. The first time I've worn it for like maybe 6 months, and we did just 800 on, 200 off, continuous for 6 to 7 Ks. And the first thing I did when I put the Next Percent on after wearing the Alpha, the Invincible and the Adios, I thought, it's not enough shoe. This Next Percent's not enough shoe under my forefoot. I could feel the ground, and it was like, I think there is such an influence on these high stack compliant foam shoes now that it's really ruining at least 90% of the shoes for me. So the Adios Pro has moved up to close behind the Alpha now. It's a shoe I wear for a race day. And the Next Percent sort of moved down the list. And I just, it's a worry.
You reckon the Adios is softer than the Next Percent too?
Nah, it's not, but it's higher up the ground. I'm running better in it, but I feel like I'm so close to the ground when I'm wearing the Next Percent when I bottom out the forefoot. So, I don't know.
I'm surprised you don't like the Metaspeed Sky, because I think I would.
I think getting given the size 10, which, you know, I'm not going to complain, it was given to me. Jason sent them through and that was fantastic. But they're half a size too small, and there's nothing worse than running fast in a shoe where your toes are just curling up at the end. You just don't feel like you're opening your stride up quite as nice, and that's all you can think about. So I reckon I would enjoy that shoe, and probably the RC Elite 2, I reckon. I'd love to get my hands on a pair of RC Elite 2 if Batty Spice is listening.
good. Yeah, so I reckon that's all for me. Like, just the what else? I haven't really been running in anything else. I did get a new pair of the ASICS GT 2000, actually. I think you chatted about that last month, didn't you, Nitta?
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, it seems like a good update. It still feels a bit closer to a traditional stability, as opposed to, say, the New Balance Vongo does feel like the Kayano Light 2. It feels more like a new age sort of stability while maintaining very soft, natural feel. The GT2000 still feels pretty nice, pretty plush in the forefoot, pretty soft, but it's still got a fair bit of torsional stiffness. I find like it's still good, Yeah, that closer to that traditional sort of stability feel, but they're definitely evolving from what the GT2000 was, which was quite a firmer sort of stiffer shoe.
Cool.
All right.
One last question for Hopper though, mate. If you could have one shoe that you wore historically throughout your whole running days come back into your lineup, what would it be?
Can I do two? One for race day and one for training?
Absolutely.
I reckon one of my favorite shoes of all time for racing would be prior to the Piba era. It was the Adidas, what is it? Adios, Adizero 2.
The yellow and black, give us Lassie.
Yellow and black. Bit of a plastic plate in there as well, I think.
Yeah, that torsion plate in there,
My
mum gave me a pair of those for my 21st birthday, the Hayley gave it to Lisa Collins. I brought them over here, so I've had them for like 5 years. And just
amazing.
All the TPU foams just flowing everywhere. And then daily trainer, this one of my favourite shoes ever, Vomero 12, and probably Vomero 13 as well. Yeah. I was gutted when the Vomero 14 came out, and I had so many pairs of the Vomero 13.
We had with Rainer, we said the same thing as well. That Vomero 12 and 13, they were just the Lunaron midsole was just a magic shoe. So that was tough. And the 14 was tough, wasn't it, to accept when it came out?
Just bring back the old models. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was one of the things that we brought up in our meeting with the Nike product guys from Beaverton is that is the shoe that you guys need to own the running market.
Like, absolutely.
That shoe covers so many different foot shapes and mechanics, and that's the biggest selling shoe category in running specialty is neutral, pretty stable with cushioning. And like that's where we feel Nike are missing a little at the moment. Like the Vomero's not quite there.
Tommy said
quite there.
Structure Triax is probably the closest thing to it, you reckon?
The Structure 24 now is shape-wise is the closest thing. Feel underneath pretty similar. It's still feels like the geometry is a little biased laterally. Like it's not quite what the Vomero 13 was. But gee, you're right about that. That was a gun shoe. Anyone who comes in, we still have customers coming in like 3-4 years later, going, "You got any of these left?"
I
see Chandler Carr's wearing the pink and purple ones still.
You're gonna hate this. I had a pair of 10.5, so half a size too big for me, but they were still fitted. I actually traded them to a mate who I run with, one of the guys, Jack Hunter. He does all the AH Elite stuff. I traded him those for a pair of new Infinities. I just loved the Infinity when it came out, but there's still regrets, but I still see him wear them every now and then. It sort of hurts a bit. Everyone makes a bad decision in their life, don't they?
Yeah. if that's your worst decision, it's okay.
Yeah. Well, the Flyknit races, one of the young guys that works at Pace, he was going to give them to just for free to one of our running mates here in Sydney. And I was like, mate, you could sling those for so much money on eBay if you back your car.
I have a cupboard full. Mm-hmm. I'll have to do it. One of these shoe geeks is bring out all my Flyknit races. I've got a collection of them. They're all brand spanking, and they're I got them when they were still coming into run specialty, so you could get them at wholesale. And then at one point, they decided, oh no, this isn't a running shoe, this is a lifestyle shoe. And so they sent them all to Hype or whatever, Platypus, and all of a sudden they're a sneakerhead shoe and they would disappear quickly. And
There was a small period of time where you were trying to sell them or a pair of streaks, and then suddenly they just disappeared out of specialty retail, didn't they? Because they were hard on the feet. So,
yeah, they made their Nike athletes wear them at London 2012, and that was like they were not a nice running shoe. They looked amazing, but you're not running a marathon in them, surely.
No,
pointy toe box, those.
Yeah, yeah, waffle outsole. That was firm as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, that was pretty good, guys. That was good fun. You bit of
thanks for coming on, Hopper. That was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Yeah, that was a good one.
Where can people find you, Hopper? Where can people find you?
They can follow me on Strava, just Sam Hopper, and then on Instagram, _Hopper_. So just a bunch of running photos, really, and the odd hike.
And the odd what?
Whoever listens to this is following that anyway, so.
The old hike. Hike.
Right, like bushwalk.
Oh, bushwalk. Oh, right, okay. Yeah, right. I might skip that.
You guys stay safe over there in New South Wales and Victoria. We're just going about our business here in South Australia, making Olympic athletes quarantine extra time when they come over. So
yeah, you motherfuckers. Yeah. We all hate you right now.
Not making us look very nice, that's for sure, on some fronts.
Not at all.
Nah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. You stay safe. Right. That was a fun episode.
See you, team.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, guys.
See you, guys. And I'm gonna hold my head up high. I was told as a young man, doesn't matter if you're white or black, just show love to everyone you meet. Doesn't matter if